Hey, Mum.
Hi, Sarah.
Welcome to Divine Enigma again. It's lovely to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
A little bit in a sort of a different environment this time. So, how have you been since? I think the last time you came on my show was like 2022, wasn't it?
Yes, 2022.
Yeah. So it's been some time. So how have you been? I always ask you this because we always see each other. Like I'm acting like I don't see you all the time.
Oh yeah, I've been good since I retired.
Yeah. So your retirement life still good?
Yeah, it's good.
Still well. Mm-hmm. So what I wanted to talk to you about actually is about the reflection journey of like your retirement and where you are right now. So like when you were at university, you were diagnosed with dyslexia and dyspraxia. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the most significant changes or like challenges you've encountered since you now like you're a retired woman? Because a lot of the time I feel like, and this is why I'm asking you, Mum, we always focus on sort of neurodiversity with people that are maybe much, much younger, particularly things around ADHD. Mm-hmm. You don't really kind of look at people who have kind of gone through that whole process of, oh, you know, I've had children, I've had life. How are you managing your neurodiversity? Because there's no cure for it. It's what you have, you carry it for all of your life. So now that you are retired, how is it now?
Well, I just get on with it. I don't pay particular attention like I used to when I was in work. But sometimes I find I waste the day because of procrastination. If I want to do something, normally I'll say to myself, well, I'll do it in a minute. And then an hour comes around and I still haven't done it. So that was later on sitting down and thinking about it. I thought, yeah, that's part of the condition.
Because
I've got free time now, I read a lot about it. And then I watch the telly. And so many people are coming out now, especially from my age group.
Yeah, because obviously back then people didn't really understand neurodiversity very well. So now, and this is the thing, like a lot of people are saying, oh, there are too many people saying they have ADHD, they're autistic. It's now like a trend, but it's not a trend. It's basically like something that you've been dealing with, but you've now got the language to explain what it is you're dealing with. Because I think I remember you mentioned last the concept of masking. And the impact it had on you in terms of how you had to navigate the workplace. Because when you do have a neurodiverse condition, because people don't see, I know generations, your generation and generations before wouldn't mask because they'll think there's something wrong with them or they're not processing it the way everyone else or a neurotypical person would process information. So you would mask. So now that you are very aware of your neurodiversity as a retired woman. Like how do you feel about the concept of masking? So just hiding the fact you have this condition?
Well, at the moment, I don't mask it anymore because people are aware of it. So sometimes if I go to the shop and I can't cope with change as well. That's one thing. So normally when I go to the shop and they've changed where things are, you know, it just stresses me out.
Yeah.
And then instead of going from aisle to aisle, I keep stopping people and asking them, where is this thing stored? Yeah. And then they will tell me, for instance, aisle 5 or something. But I said, well, I thought it was always here. So why have you moved it? And little things like that.
I believe they do that in supermarkets on purpose for the marketing ploys to try and keep people to come to certain parts of the shop so they can sell certain items. But that's a whole other subject in itself. I remember last time we spoke, you said you received a lot of support and accommodation needs when you were at university.
Oh, yes, I did.
Have these accommodations, such as like getting the specialist equipment and like extra time, has that enhanced your daily retirement, or because you've come out of that environment of education, has that completely changed?
Yeah. Yes, because I make my own time.
Yeah.
But what I do now, because I can't cope with being late, and also, so I normally leave, if I've got an appointment, let's say 4 o'clock, I'll go there for 3 and sit down and wait in the car. Because when the time is getting nearer, I start panicking.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I noticed.
From the assessments that you had, you've learned from, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, because there's nobody to give me that extra time. I've got to give myself extra time so that I make room for just in case there's traffic or any eventuality.
Yeah. I remember you mentioned last time that when you did your dyslexia and dyspraxia assessment, it was very challenging, like it was really hard on you. But ultimately, you found it quite, you know, useful and valuable for you to know that this is the outcome. Now that you obviously knew you had dyslexia and dyspraxia, has that shaped your understanding, like the way you view your neurodiversity now that you were a retired woman?
Oh, yes. And now I can say to people, because there's a stigma around it during my generation. Yeah. So
I think the stigma is still there.
Yeah, it's so still there. I normally don't, there are certain people that I don't tell that I've got the condition up to date.
Why do you think that is?
Oh yeah, because they judge you, or they think you're not normal. So I just don't say anything.
The thing is, like, what I find with neurodiversity, people always say, oh, it's not normal, but what is essentially normal? Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I'm neurodiverse, so I'm talking, like, my mum is neurodiverse, we're both neurodiverse.
Mm-hmm.
And I've, like, been really studying a lot about neurodiversity and the way people view it. Some neurodivergent people see themselves as, I have a learning difference. I learn differently from people. Some are happy to accept the fact they're disabled. Some say they have a superpower, and that whole superpower notion is, I don't know what to say. It can be quite a form of toxic positivity, because sometimes you can look at someone who is a neurodivergent. Say, for example, they have dyslexia, but you see them performing at such a high level.
Yeah.
And you're wondering, well, I'm dyslexic, so how come they can perform at that and I can't? And then you then question your disability or your learning difference, and don't feel validated by that because of this whole notion of superpower. Although that person may be struggling with something else that you may not see, because they're I hate the term, but they're kind of like high functioning. They function like at a high level, but they have their own struggles. So sometimes I think neurodiversity should be seen for what it is. To me, now as I look into it, it's a disability. It's just like if you physically cannot walk and you need an aid of a stick or a wheelchair, you can still do the normal day-to-day things, but you just have to do them in a different way. It doesn't make you a superhero or have a superpower. I just think you just have to see things a bit differently, or I guess behave a different way compared to someone who is able-bodied. Or I'm maybe making it quite simplistic in that way, but I think sometimes it depends on who you talk to, like in terms of the stigma, and that there's some people, if you tell them, oh, I'm dyslexic, they almost look at you as, well, is that like a dumb person's condition or something like that.
Yes, that's...
But if they're an educated person and they go do their research, there's a lot. Dyslexia is a lot more than reading and writing and the ability. What were you going to say, Mum?
Yeah, there's a lot of knowledge about it. They actually promoting it. And so most people who didn't know about it now are kind of getting an understanding. And some people are even trying to get themselves tested. Because when you discuss the symptoms and all the behavioral problems, most people have it. And then they think about themselves that, I wonder if I've got
dyslexia
or dyspraxia. The thing with
dyslexia is one of those ones, because you can't go to your GP and ask for a dyslexia test. It's a more of an educational
psychologist
that would have to see that you have dyslexia, because it's, people always, you know, refer it to as a form of reading and writing ability. But it's actually a lot more than that. So, like, when I got tested for dyslexia, it's not that I couldn't read or write. It's just the way the information I was reading wasn't processing it in the way that someone who was neurotypical.
Yeah.
So, like, I'll look at a piece of text, I'll read it 2, 3, 4 times, and I will not understand what is written on that piece of paper, because there's a thing that they say that dyslexics have a very difficult time, like, decoding language. So when they're reading stuff, although they can read the words, the comprehension doesn't kind of stay in their brain. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I found when I got diagnosed as well, is things like, because of the decoding issue, I can't pronounce words properly.
Yeah, I remember.
And also things like, I can't spell stuff properly because, you know, it's the decoding of language. I can't spell it, but I know it in my head. So it's really frustrating. So it's like, I know the information, but my mouth doesn't connect to what I'm seeing. So
I've got to write it down.
Yeah.
To actually see it physically. Yeah.
So that's why when you go to a doctor and say, can I have a dyslexia test? They're like, no, it's an educational thing.
Yes.
Whereas with ADHD, which sometimes, if you have ADHD and another neurodiverse condition, sometimes you could have both. They can give you medication for your ADHD. And that's why you can go to a GP and say, look, I think I have ADHD. Can I have an assessment for it?
Oh.
That's the difference. Mm-hmm. So it can be very frustrating. So if you're a person that, and there's a lady that I came on my podcast a few weeks ago called Shayaton, and she's doing a campaign to try and get people assessed for dyslexia and neurodiverse conditions, but very early on. Because a lot of people that are in the school system and they get missed. And the reason why they get missed is because the teachers either don't know what to do with them and just put them on at the lowest set and put them in special needs class, or they do well, but they mask very well. So the teachers think, well, they're okay, and they can just continue with that. And only when they get to maybe, if they're even able to get to university or get to college, that's when it becomes more apparent. And I always find that a lot of people who do get diagnosed with things like dyslexia, I'm just using dyslexia as an example, they don't get diagnosed until they're at university. Because they'll then, the university will say, oh, by the way, this is what's happening to you. And then you can get things like access to the disability student allowance, which gives you things like a laptop or certain software that you can put on your computer that can help you read text and things like that, and glasses and all these things that you need.
And but even had a special room where you can study and use the computers.
Cool. Yeah.
That's another thing I had when I was in uni. So
this is the problem with some neurodiverse conditions. Are not can be missed out, and you could be living your whole life with a disability. This is how I like to refer to it.
Mm-hmm.
Some might say, no, it's a difference, but I see it as a disability. And you're struggling to try and overcome all the challenges that you're facing in your workplace and, you know, everything you're doing, and wondering why you're not getting there, because no one diagnosed you. You're undiagnosed. Yeah. So it is an interesting one.
I had to use unpaid hours to catch up.
Exactly.
Otherwise... So instead of me starting from 9, I used to go in at 7. So the 2 hours would give me enough time to kind of catch up.
And kind of like segueing into that, that's like, if an employer is able to take on a neurodivergent employee, if they put the adjustments in place for that person, they can do the work within the allocated time. So for example, if like... simple things like I work for an employer. Simple things like having Claro Read, which I install onto my laptop so I can read documents, because I work as a project manager, program manager. And in those areas, I need to read lots of documentation. So because I'm reading all this documentation, sometimes it could be a lot. So by having things like Claro Read would then give me the ability to read the text loud out for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not every workplace that does that, but it depends where you work. Like I've made my points clear. Like with neurodiverse people, if that workplace is not going to be accepting of your neurodiversity, don't go and work there. Like there are plenty of employers out there that do take on neurodivergent individuals that are prepared to make those adaptations for them, and you get your work done in the correct amount of time, and you will not be seen as an inconvenience or problem in the workplace. The work environment, it will accommodate for your needs, and I feel that it should be a normal thing. It shouldn't have to be like, oh, we have to put this on. It's not a big thing. It's only small things you have to do just to make it a lot easier for your employee to, you know, perform in the workplace.
But the employers should actually be trained
and
courses to know more about
neurodivergencies. No, it's true, because like I've seen instances where you can go into like an office and they'll say, oh, we care about disability needs and stuff, but then even though they put that on their website, or they claim that they fly the flag for disabled people, so they say, when you actually go there, you will see that a manager might say, oh, you might be given a manager. The manager, you tell your manager, I have ADHD, I have dyslexia. And then the manager doesn't know how to manage you accordingly. They're not given those toolkits to manage that particular employee. Mm-hmm. Although the company on the whole will say, when you are divergent friendly, they haven't really put those processes in place. So you're there as an employee, you're there, you've got a manager that doesn't know how to manage you with your neurodiverse condition, and you feel like you're almost a burden to the organization. Whereas it shouldn't even be seen that way. It should be seen the opposite way. It should be seen as, I am coming here to bring value to the workplace. Yes, I have a neurodiverse condition, but if you put these things in place, then I can perform to the way that you want me to perform.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be seen as like an inconvenience. It's just like, you know, if someone can do a job well, and like I'm going back to my, you know, physical disability, you will have ramps in the building so they can get around the building. You will ensure that they could work from home more so that they can get the work done, because sometimes going on public transport might not be convenient for them, but they're performing to a high level. And that's what I find with neurodivergent people. They perform to a high level, even probably more higher than some neurotypicals.
Oh, yes.
But because they're not given those adaptations at work, they can't perform to that level. So sometimes it's about, it's you navigating that whole arena of, and I know that there's some places that you feel like you're privileged to work there, but you don't want them to know you have a neurodiverse condition, which is where the masking comes, where then you're not being real to yourself. And then that's where all the insecurity comes.
Mm-hmm.
Things like imposter syndrome sets in and all those other aspects.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. What about now while you're retired, you don't have to deal with all of that stuff, Mum?
Well, no. I do think about it, because even though I've retired, I've got paperwork to do, emails to send. I'm going on the internet, you know, doing stuff. And so sometimes it's quite frustrating. And then my concentration span is very limited. Sometimes I'll be watching this, within the next 5 minutes, my brain is wandered up. I'm doing something else, you see. So it takes me a while to finish a task.
Yeah.
That's what I've noticed.
Yeah. So if you think about individuals considering seeking assessment and support for the neurodiverse conditions, particularly in retirement, what advice would you offer to them to navigate this process? Especially if you know, they're concerned about the associated costs that come with these assessments. Because obviously, if you're in education, you get like a student loan, you get a grant, you get disability student allowance. What would you say to someone who is, let's say they're 60 and they're retired, or now the government wants us to work to 71, but that's another topic for another day. Mm-hmm. But like, what would you say to them if they were like, you know, I think I might have dyslexia potentially?
Yeah, they should get support. Go and research on the dyslexia website and see what help is out there. Mm-hmm. And then go for it. Don't give up. Be making phone calls, sending emails and all that. And
so you're saying they need to have resilience?
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah. I feel like a lot
And
of,
they can't discriminate. Yeah. They want you to stay and work. Your age is already against you.
Mm.
Coupled with that condition, so don't give up. Just push. And push as much as you can. And hopefully, you know, they will listen to you.
Yeah. As someone who's like navigated neurodiversity personally, and through me, because you said that because I got my dyslexia test, listen to the first episode I did with my mom, and then you will know the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, my journey of like finding out that I had dyslexia, and now that I'm building this neurodiversity platform, what do you make of it, mom? I don't know, give me feedback.
Oh, you've improved. I'm quite impressed.
Yeah.
You know, starting from the first podcast to now, there's a lot of improvement, lots and lots. So well done to you.
Thanks, mom. And like looking
You're
ahead,
welcome to,
what are your hopes and aspirations for promoting neurodiversity awareness and like inclusion in retirement, particularly because the retirees are a very much forgotten group of people, but you guys still matter, you know?
Yeah, we do. We do. There's hope because there's an awareness that has been created, and I mean, it's in the media and everywhere. So there's hope for us as well.
You feel there's hope?
Oh, yeah, there is.
Where's the hope coming from, Mum?
Well, we've got to fight for the hope.
Yeah.
We've got to fight for the hope. And then, I mean, I have to find out whether HUK have got something like that in place. Yeah.
They're a very good charity.
Yeah, because you can even go there. If, for instance, if you're still working, you can go there and seek advice and they could help. Or, what do you call it?
Many neurodivergency charities.
Yes.
There's loads of neurodivergency charities. There's Lexic, there's Genius Within.
Mm.
I'll put all of the like,
there's actually
the show notes and stuff, but yeah, there's loads of them out there. And also, because of this passion I've driven for neurodiversity, I've created my membership through that called NeuroEnigma. And what the membership has, it has a number of different amazing things within it. So one of the big cool things I add in the membership is mental health wellbeing days and weekends and retreats. And what you'll get within my membership is that you'll get to choose what type of mental health well-being that you would like. And then as more people book, we can all go there as well. And you'll get to meet me, probably get to meet my mum, probably. A bunch of neurodiverse people coming on retreat to help them with their sort of sensory overload.
Yeah.
And also within my membership, there's a load of resources. So coming up, I'm going to be hosting a mastermind on how to scale your business and look for funding. So there's a lady that I'm currently speaking to right now. She's actually head of another neurodiversity membership that she has, a community of neurodiverse women, or most of them are ADHD women. But she has somehow navigated her dyslexia and ADHD, and she's now asking for fundraising for her business, and getting more people to invest in things like ADHD and different neurodiverse conditions that people have. So there'll be a mastermind coming soon. But if you go to neuroenigma.com, that's where all the membership details are, and you should just check it out and join. And also, again, I've got loads of things coming up, actually. You know, there's another one coming up, which is on the 20th of March, which is how to understand your dyslexia. And it's I had a podcast episode, which is actually probably out now. There's a guy who, he's a dyslexia academic. Listen to the podcast, but he has a really amazing story where, because he couldn't write his master's theory, he actually did a video
I saw that on YouTube.
Yeah, he did a video of it, and he submitted that to his professor, and they took that in as his work, because he couldn't write the he couldn't write it down. And that's the thing, that is inclusivity, that you're giving people the option to submit work in a different way, not in the standard way you've got to write essay. Because sometimes for people writing essays, it's a lot of headache, and it takes a lot of brain power. Even if you're not neurodiverse, you know, even as a neurotypical, that it does take a lot of brain power. So so that's another thing that I want to let our audience members know. Mum, anything else you want to add in terms of like what kind of positive things do you want to say? Because you had lots of positive things to say in the last episode around neurodiversity, being dyslexic, being dyspraxic, and being retired, being a lady of leisure.
Well, you've put me on the spot.
See how you're acting all shy? Like, you're acting all shy, Mum.
No, I'm not.
Normally, guys, she doesn't act like this. She is very, she'll be shouting me down, Sarah, where are you? Now she's like, no, I'm just, you know, I'm very quiet. This is not how she, but anyway, it's fine. Let me not say anything. Yeah. What were you going to say, Mum?
Yeah, what was the question?
So any positive things you want to say to people who are neurodivergent and what they should do, particularly people that are retired? Because I feel your demographic get left behind. I know the young people get help. So, you know, the teenagers and people in school.
Yeah, but I've noticed.
Gen Zs and millennials, we get a little bit of help, but your age.
I've noticed some of them are even paying for it themselves to be
diagnosed.
And a few people I've spoken to actually got diagnosed in their 60s. And at the time, all those symptoms, see, when the awareness was created, all the kind of things, their behavior and all that was similar. And so they paid for it. And it happened that some of them have dyslexia, dyspraxia, and What are the other ones?
Dyscalculia.
Oh, no.
That's to do with numbers. There's Tourette syndrome. There's autism, and ASD, the autism spectrum.
The whole list of...
Yeah, it's all under the umbrella of neurodiversity.
But when you think about every... They are not all the same. Everybody... I might be dyslexic. Someone else might be, but... We've all got different traits.
Yeah. Yes. So when the term of neurodiversity came up, it's a form of biodiversity, which means that it's like having... So when you look at the different people, so we have black people, Asians, whites, you know, Southern Asian, Eastern Asian, they're a different type of human race. It's the same with the way the mind works. So a neurodiverse condition is a different form of biodiversity. And it's split. We have neurotypical people and we have neurodiverse people. So neurodiverse people have different, you know, different ways their brain operates under biodiversity. That's the difference. Okay. So it's not, that's why some people, this is why some people don't see neurodiversity as a disability. They see it as a difference. But some see it as a disability. Well, as I see my neurodiversity as a disability because I know that I have to, I've got ADHD and dyslexia. My ADHD is inattentive. So sometimes I can go into this procrastination mode where it's like I really want to do the work.
Yeah.
But my brain will not allow me to do the work.
I'm always there.
Then you go into this cycle of feeling guilt for not doing what you're supposed to do, but you can't help it because you've gone into this inattentive mode. And inattentive ADHD is very typical with women because when they first diagnosed ADHD, it was mostly in like, I guess, little white boys that, you know, are crying in Tesco and saying to me, and that was what they saw ADHD as. And they only looked at the hyperactivity, but as more research has been done, now they're diagnosed in adults. So that diagnostic of adults didn't even happen until probably 2017 or something like that. Because it was all in kids. It was just children that were diagnosed with ADHD. And now they're seeing, oh, actually, the ADHD is also in adults. And then they also saw that ADHD is not just in men. It actually affects women as well. But the reason why ADHD wasn't diagnosed in women is because of societal, like the way, you know how women societally are more reserved. And I guess boys are allowed to be more boisterous and run around and that, fall on the floor or whatever they want to do. That's why like boys would get diagnosed more easily. But now obviously people are being educated about it. Girls also can have ADHD. So, and it's the same with things like autism as well. Most of the time autism was diagnosed in boys. And now we're seeing that girls with autism, they have it. And autism is, again, it's a spectrum because like the way someone's autism turns up for them is different. There's some autistic people that are nonverbal. There's some that can talk and they're fine, but they just don't know how to give eye contact or they get very awkward.
And they have social got feelings.
And I beg to differ that autistic people don't have feelings. They do have feelings, but the difference is they feel so much, they don't know how to react to how they're feeling. They can feel more intensely, actually, than people that are neurotypical. But people always assume because someone's autistic, they don't have feelings, they don't react to stuff. It's because the reaction inside of them, they can't present it like everyone else. So, yeah. So, Mum.
What are you going to ask
me? So I was asking you about, you know, neurodiverse people in your age group and how they should navigate their neurodiverse condition as retired.
Yeah, but I've answered that question
already. You answered already, yeah?
Yeah.
So going forward, Mum, what do you hope in the future?
Oh, well, I hope they're going to listen to us more and factor us in. Because normally when you reach over 60, they're probably thinking to themselves, what's the use? You're not going to be able to bring them any benefits. So, but people, we should fight for whatever our rights.
Yeah, of course.
That's what I think.
How do you feel? There's something that I had, there's a question that I actually thought about. How do you feel, and I kind of mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast, how do you feel about people saying that people are overdiagnosed? So I'm seeing that quite a lot. So there's a thing that they're saying people are being overdiagnosed and they don't, I guess, really have a neurodiverse condition. What do you think about that?
Well, how do they know that? That's the question I'm asking.
Exactly. How do they know that?
they don't just diagnose you. You go through so many things, sometimes 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Of testing and all. Then I don't know how they use things, but it's not a straightforward test. And probably that's why it's very, very difficult to assess.
I feel like when someone says people are being overdiagnosed, it's a form of an ableist language.
No.
It's ableist. It's almost like, oh, well, you're pretending to be neurodiverse so you can get benefits. No, it's just like that thing that's saying that you're pretending to be sick.
You so can't
that
the government,
pretend. Yeah.
Because, I mean, I didn't even want to take the test in the first place.
Yeah.
As I said, yeah.
Yeah, on the previous episode, she's like, yeah, your friend told you to take it. Yeah,
she said, no, she said, you've got it because your behavior is like mine. I said, and so she dragged me down. And so when the results came up, oh my God.
It's funny that how neurodiverse people can recognize each other. I find that so like interesting because I can sometimes look at certain people. Like I work in tech as well, and I notice a lot of people that are in tech. There's a little bit of a neurodiverse condition there, and I think it's so beautiful. I think it's so beautiful because the fact that they're very technical, their neurodiversity makes them thrive in that tech industry. There's a lot of people in the tech, especially software engineers and stuff. A lot of them are on that autism spectrum and I can see it. And, you know, that autism spectrum makes them like so hyper-focused when they're coding and coming up with stuff. So, but I can always kind of tell, I don't know.
Yeah, you do. You can.
I think you're a little bit neurodiverse, but it's okay. And there's another thing that I find as well is the acceptance. So like for me, I think I found it very hard to accept I had dyslexia and ADHD. I didn't want to accept I had it for a long time. It was something I found really difficult to accept. What about you, Mum? You were happy, like, this
is me. Yeah, well, I accepted it because when you had it,
yeah,
and then they said I had it, and I thought probably, well, you must have inherited it from me. Yeah, that's what I thought.
It runs in family, they say.
Yes, so. I mean, if they diagnosed me before you, then it would be difficult for me to accept. Oh. But because I've already seen the process and everything, it wasn't a surprise for me.
Oh, that's interesting, Mom. Mm-hmm.
If I didn't go to uni, I don't think I would have got myself tested.
So you're saying that like, if you had been tested with dyslexia before I tested myself with dyslexia, then you feel like it would have been hard for you to accept.
Oh, yes.
Rather than I am dyslexic.
Absolutely.
And then you get... Oh, that's interesting. I didn't...
I wouldn't, because around those times, the early 2000s, the stigma was there. A lot.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I'm concerned, I can write, I can read, I can do things, you see. But after you had yours and with all the support you had, it wasn't a bad thing when I got diagnosed. I just thought, well, I've lived with it for decades. And struggled when I was in secondary school. Means I have to put in extra time all the time to catch up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's tiring. It's tiring at times having to put the extra work in. But that's one thing I love about neurodiverse people. We're very, very resilient. The ones I've come across anyway, because you know we have to work a little harder than everyone else. So it's a good thing and it can be a very frustrating thing as well at the same time.
Yeah, when you've got support mechanism around you, you can flow through nicely. Yeah.
Okay. So I think We have covered a lot on neurodiversity, mum, your history, what your hopes are for the future. Mum, what I always like to end the podcast on is like, can you say, and I'm going to say three positive things from the reflection you said from last time. Can you think of three positive things for people that are neurodiverse? And then I guess three negative things that you feel that people should be aware of, because I'm not about toxic positivity.
They are very...
So the first three positives, yeah, we start with three negatives and end with three positives. The three negative things.
It's quite frustrating when you can't, you know, you can't do things. For instance, I can tell you about driving. I come to this place all the time, at least twice a week, because I go to the Glades. And for many years, I've been doing that. I still don't know the name of this street.
Yes.
Because when you were saying turn on A Street, and I'm thinking, where is A Street? And I pass it all the time. Mm-hmm. It's not a strange place. And so that's one negative.
Second one.
The second one is the procrastination.
Oh my goodness.
I've got some paperwork. Normally when the letter comes, I said, oh, I'm going to file it. Every financial year I say that and I don't.
Do you know what you should do for the body doubling? I have body doubling as part of my membership. So anyone that's listening to this, if you're like my mum and you are a big, massive procrastinator, come to the Divine and Eggma website, divineandeggma.org. Go to the community tab, and if you scroll down, you can book in a double bodying session that will help you for procrastination, because you're like forced to have someone watch you do what you need to do.
Because sometimes, yes, I say to myself, oh, I do it, and then I don't do it. And then I say to myself, before I go to bed, I said, oh God, I'm going to do it in the morning, starting from Monday to Sunday. And then I feel guilty. And then I might tackle it for about an hour. And then I get distracted doing something else. And so that's a big disadvantage. Yeah, yes.
I can attest to that as well. Third one, third negative.
No, third negative. I don't know.
I can give you my third negative. Yeah, I cannot spell to save my life. Can't spell. yeah. So I have to use talk to text.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I can't spell. That's a negative. Yeah, that's really annoying.
I can spell verbally. So normally if there's a spelling, I write it down. Okay. And then I can see it.
So your visual.
Visual, yeah.
Going to the three positives then.
Oh, the three positives of, well, it's out there now. Most people know about it. There's an awareness, and the government is trying to fund for more people to be tested. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's that's a very, really very good thing.
Yes.
Second?
And there are charities there, and then.
But for you? Your positives for you.
Yeah, for my positive.
Oh. I should say one is forgetfulness.
Yeah, yes. Forgetfulness. Yeah, that's a disadvantage. It's not a positive.
Yeah, it's
thing.
A disadvantage. I would say, I would say that people that are neurodiverse, particularly if you've got dyslexia, I would say you're very intuitive. And I don't know what the word to use, but very inventive. Like, you'll always find a way of overcoming something. So
that's so true, yeah.
So like today, this put like a story for today, like I had a different guest here and they didn't turn up and everything was going wrong. But I just thought, like, we can make this work. We can do something.
And I haven't prepared for it.
Yeah, we can make this work.
You know, funny enough, the one. And then you see coming here, one positive thing I've seen is looking at these sensory things. That is what has relaxed me.
Yeah.
Because having, you only told me about 2 hours.
Yeah, this was going to happen. Yeah.
And then I said to you, let's go. Because once we are late in the traffic, I'll start panicking. And then it's going to spoil the whole thing. But when I go into the studio.
Studio is lovely. Yeah.
Oh, same. God. It's very, very calming.
Yeah, it's a really lovely studio.
And so that's one thing I can take from here. get something like this, similar, just to relax.
Yeah. So, positives. Another thing about neurodiverse people and dyslexics, we get sidetracked. This is what's happening right now.
I do a lot. And as I'm getting older, it's kind of.
Guys.
But then the awareness I have when I know I'm this. Within 5 minutes, I've got to call myself back.
Guys, I have to tell you something. When I'm talking to my mum, she will get sidetracked. We'll be talking about something and then she'll go into a different topic.
And then I forget all about
her. I'm like, mum, we would... Anyway, yeah. But
so that... Well, it is what it is. Yeah, you have to take it.
Yeah, it's what it is.
And manage with it.
So, two positives, mum, because we still need to, before we wrap up the episode.
Well, the positive thing about having in retirement, I've got plenty of time to kind of, if I've got an important thing to do, I've got plenty of time to get it done. Yeah. Without having to be worrying about deadlines and things like that.
You know, that's a positive, but that can also work against you. Sometimes it's good to have that structure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one day I'll get to retirement and I'll still want some kind of, I don't know, structure. Because the day can just go very quickly. Although you feel like you have a lot more time to
but I do. I do have structure. Yeah. I've actually created structure. Like, I wake up in the morning, early in the morning, do my
prayers
and all that. And then I do some service or listen to podcasts and things. And then after 9, because my friends will be phoning me and all that. But from between 5 and 8 in the morning, that's my time.
I'm going to do the last positive for you because you're just getting sidetracked now. I would say that generally with people who are neurodiverse, dyslexics, we tend to be a really good bunch of lovely people.
Yeah.
I tend to find a lot of neurodiverse people are actually really nice people. And I love this about our community.
And I'm very nice. I'm extremely very nice.
I love the fact you big up for yourself, but mum,
I did because you called me if I wasn't nice.
My mum's lovely. She is. She'll do anything for you if you get to know her. She's lovely. I'm very lucky. I'm very blessed.
Thank you.
To have a beautiful and kind mum.
You're not just saying it because I'm sitting down.
No.
But it's the truth though. I'll take that.
Okay. All right then. So thank you so much for listening to this podcast. And hopefully we'll have more sessions like this and more of a sort of intimate moment for the Divine Enigma podcast. So thank you guys and we'll see you next time.
Okay. Bye bye. Thank you.
Thank you guys.
Thank you.